You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hi, this is Jay Horowitz, latest edition of Amazing Men's Conversation with my friend of 40 years, Keith Hernandez.
40 years, Jay.
I want to talk about another anniversary phrase. 18 years at SNY, you, Gary, and Ronnie together. When you stopped playing in 90, did you ever think your broadcast career would be longer than your major league career?
I didn't know. I had no idea that I was going to get this. When I retired, Jay, and I went up to Cleveland in 90, and
right.
I tore my calf, and I remember the year before I had the broken kneecap against the Dodgers, and that really ended my career. And 90 was such an embarrassment. And I didn't watch a baseball game for 6 years. And I just kind of hung out in the city and with friends. I didn't watch a game, didn't watch a World Series, didn't watch a playoff game or an All-Star game. And what ironically, what got me back to watching baseball was the Maguire-Sosa home run chase.
Right.
And I was watching it, and I didn't realize, you know, the undercurrents under there. It just didn't dawn on me. But that got me back to watching baseball. And then, you know, I just, that David Katz, the young agent, came up to me in Elaine's and said, you should be doing Met broadcasts. And I said, well, I don't think I want to get into that. And he said, well, here's my card. Can I get your number? Can I call you occasionally just to see if you change your mind? So he kept calling him every 6 months, and finally I said, okay. And that's how he went and pitched it to Doubleday, Nelson.
You started with Sports Channel and Channel 11, right?
Right.
And then, but I mean,
Channel 9, wasn't
Channel
it?
Channel 9, yeah. But for 18 years, you know, more than Lindsay, Ralph, and Murph, together more than any other, I mean, did you think that would be possible when it started?
No, not at all. I mean, I grew up with Russ Hodges and Lon Simmons in San Francisco. Those were my voices as a kid growing up. So we basically, I never dreamed it would be this. Did you?
No.
I mean, come on.
Why do you think this works so well? I mean, for me, listen, I've known you a long time. You haven't changed a bit since you were a player. You tell it like it is. No false pretenses. You know, I think that's why the fans love you so much. There's no BS about you.
Well, I think that I give a lot of credit to the Wilpons who wanted a real, honest broadcast.
Right.
They insisted upon that, and they always had our back. And we've had our issues over the years with players that were sensitive, and but that's what the Wilpons wanted. So I always said I think that Gary's probably the backbone of the broadcast.
He's the quarterback.
Oh, Gary, absolutely. He's a play-by-play, and he brings Ron and I and our experiences through our career, playing career. Ronnie, of course, with the pitching, he knows more about pitching than I do. But Ronnie also knows the game, and because he played. And it's just a good blend. I really think that having Ronnie, I couldn't do the details on mechanics that Ronnie can do. So I think it's a good thing to have, a good balance, to have me on the offensive side, Ronnie on the pitching side.
But did you know Gary before you started at all?
No, Gary came in 88, my last year.
Right.
Well, actually, 89 was my last year. And was it 88 he came, or was it came in 89?
89, I think, 89.
No, it's not having a good year. So I really don't remember meeting. I mean, I was out a lot that year with the, I mean, I missed 10 weeks, you know, with that broken patella. And so I got to meet Gary more so when I got back into the broadcasting end.
How much of it did help you that you had a relationship with Ronnie, your teammate, you know, knew him, going to dinner, went to Rusty's a lot? I mean, did that help a lot that you had a prior relationship with him before he started this?
Definitely, I think so, because Ronnie and I had a familiarity. If we would have had, if I'd had to go work with someone, I mean, I would have gotten, you know, used to that person, but it made the adjustment, all three of us, because Gary came from radio. it just made it more. It made it more of a smooth transition for us.
Keith, did you mentioned Russ Hodges, Lon Simmons. Did you pan at anything after them, or not really? Just do your own thing. I mean,
we didn't have much TV back in those days. They only televised the Dodger games, so we had 9 games down in Dodger Stadium, which they televised the whole season. So we listened to them on the radio, basically, and I always knew that they were conversational. Lon Simmons.
Right.
Lon had a good sense of humor, and they worked well together. They were very conversational, and they laughed, and they had a good time. And I was a kid, I was a little leaguer, and I was listening to that. We'd be out in the street playing, and Sam Savoca, our neighbor, was 2 houses down from us, and on the weekends, he would work in his garage, and we'd tell him to turn his radio up real loud, and we'd listen to the ball games as we were playing baseball in the street. And I just remember that, you know, it's 162 games, and you don't want a dry broadcast, and we don't have that.
Even like, I know Greg Pickett brings a lot to the table, the director. You know, when we have blog games, you read the press guide, look at baseball cards. You know, people said even when the game is not interesting, you guys find a way to keep it interesting.
Well, I think it's a lot that has to do with our producer, Greg Pickett. Those are his ideas, the baseball cards on blowout games, throwing me in the parking booth, accepting the money from the people,
right,
where they park their cars. Uh-huh. Ronnie and I playing catch with a bunch of kids one time out in the parking lot. That's all Greg. Greg always finds ways to keep it interesting.
I like to think of Colorado when you went to the Texas Western store.
Although, yes.
And trying the stuff.
Trying on the clothes. I've been going to that store for 20 years. Yes. Gary, actually, Lynn, his wife, called me, and she was in Denver. And I didn't have the trip. She called me in New York. She said, "What's the name of that store?" And she wound up getting Gary a winter jacket, a long jacket, because he does Seton Hall basketball. And so that was fun to do that.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Okay, let me talk about June 15th, 83. I get a call from J. Frank Cashin. He said, "I got good news and bad news for you, Jay. What is it? We just traded for an MVP batting champ, world championship guy. Probably hates New York. Doesn't like New York at all." Before, I said, why didn't you like New York? I mean, is that blown out of proportion? Or
no, I didn't. Hate's a strong word. I was afraid of New York. Remember, when I came here, the city was going broke, and it was a dangerous city. We stayed over at the old Sheraton Hotel, the New York Sheraton on 7th Avenue. Right off of on 56th, and I remember we flew in from St. Louis my first trip in September 74, my first trip to Shea, and we flew in, and we didn't get in until like around 2 in the morning, and I checked into my room, and I was ready to go back off and go walk to the elevator, and George Kissel, was Red's bench coach at that time, grabbed me and pulled me to follow me, and he sent me out on sidewalk on 6th Avenue, or 7th Avenue. I can't remember which one it was. I think it was, not sure. It doesn't matter. He pointed to Central Park, and he goes, "Don't go there.
Don't go there."
Then he pointed towards the Hudson's West.
"Don't go there."
It's Hell's Kitchen. "Don't go there." Then he pointed downtown, and he goes, he goes, "Times Square, don't go there." And he goes, "If you want to," he pointed to the north, to the east, and he said, "If you want to go out, you can go to Upper East Side." Yeah. So I never went out in New York, even when I played. And I saw all the movies when I was a kid. And New York was always a seedy, and it was always cop movies, Frank Sinatra, the detective, and all the things that I grew up with. and New York was kind of a little wild and crazy town, and I had these preconceived notions of New York, I just never really. I went out. Was a believe it or not, I was a rest town for me.
Really?
Yes.
That's hard.
As I was a cardinal.
That's hard. So, let me close, Richard. So I came up to deal, meet you with a limousine.
Yes.
And unfortunately, I went to the wrong gate. I took the limo back.
You went to the wrong baggage claim.
I went to the wrong baggage claim, exactly. And you took a cab back. The reaction when you went to the locker room, I mean, when you went, Tom Seaver said, welcome to the Stems.
Stems.
And what did Kiwi say?
Kingman, who never had any emotion when he played.
Yes, yeah.
Never talked.
Yeah.
Very serious. He came, when I walked in that door, he came from his locker.
Yeah.
And he came up with the biggest smile on his face. And I've never seen him smile. And I thought his face was going to crack. And he put his hand out and shook my hand with his other hand on my hand, a double-fisted handshake, and he goes, I'm so glad you're here. You're my ticket out of here.
And he never really played much after he got the trade, right? He played some outfield.
No, he didn't play hard at all.
Yeah,
I played.
How much?
He was happy. He didn't mind that.
Yeah, I mean, he actually stayed in my house one summer and played. We used to commute together. He paid for the tolls. How much did your father play into? You come in 83, don't have a contract. The story goes that your dad said, listen, the Mets got a lot on the farm, right. Gooden, Darling. Is that overblown? Is that pretty much accurate that your father helped sell you on the future of the franchise?
Well, during that 81 year with the strike year and the two seasons, it was the longest. At that point, it was the longest strike in any professional sports right. history. ESPN was televising minor league games. And my dad was watching, and he watched Tidewater, and he watched, he saw Doc and Daryl. And, he said, I just think I know that Lasorda called me in the winter, which is tampering, and said, I'd love to have you come to Los Angeles and be my first baseman. He wasn't supposed to do that.
That's
tampering. And I was very tempted to do that. And then my dad just said, yeah, they got these guys down in AAA, Strawberry and Gooden, and yeah, they got some good young players. I watched them on TV. I think you might want to give it a little second thought. I mean, you might just be walking right into a gold mine, which was really what it was. So I made the decision that my dad was always very wise, and he always seemed to be make the right decisions, and I always seemed to make the wrong ones. So I went and signed, because I thought about it for 48 hours, and I said, I'm going to run with Dad's advice. And I got on the phone and called Frank. I said, I'm staying.
When did you know in the spring of 84 that you made the right decision? I mean, I think we won 90 games that first year you were here from 63
yes.
to 90.
Mm-hmm.
Did you know right away it was going to be something special?
Around 10 days into spring training, 2 weeks, we got familiar with each other, and you know, Roger was there and wasn't going to make the team. There was Roger on the team, and
he was hurt, I think.
I don't think he made the team.
Right.
We had Doug Sis had the big year, right. Jesse, Fitzgerald, Hubie, Ron Gardenhier, Wally. I had no idea that we were going to win 90 games. But I just sensed, how can you not look at Daryl and Doc and just go, oh, my gosh, look at these guys. So it's a foundation of an organization. So we just kind of, I felt good about it. By the third week of spring training, and then it just carried over into the season.
I mean, so you come from a new team. It did take a little while to become a leader. And Davey eventually named as your captain.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Davey was a big part of this, right? Because he had rules, but he knew what let the guys play. And I mean, he always referred to you as your coach on the field.
Well, I took my cue from Lou Brock when all of a sudden when I was young and struggling and had all the insecurities, didn't know if I belonged, and Lou was my counselor, whatever you want to call it. He took the time to take care of me and prod me, and I just, when I came over, now I was in Lou's shoes, and I had all these young 21-year-olds, and I remember my first year, first 2 years, 74, 75 of St. Louis, it was a veteran club with Gibson, and they weren't, it was a veteran team, and I was 20 years old, and I just didn't feel like I belonged, and it was an unfriendly bunch, but it was like everybody's got to take care of themselves. Lou was the only one, and there was Ted Sizemore as well, but Lou primarily. So I just gravitated right to the role. I looked after around, like I said, 10 days of spring training, and I saw all these young players. And I said, and I just made a decision that I was going to do what Lou did for me. I was going to be that for them. And that was a conscious effort to do that.
Keith, why do you think in the 86 team is so beloved? I mean, the different personalities, the comeback win last game. I mean, like, we won twice, 69-86, different personalities. But, I mean, they had the latest stuff, 30 for 30. People still love the team. Personalities, why do you think the team is still so beloved? I mean,
well, I just think it's been, this is the 38th year?
37 years.
So it's going on 38 years. It's a long time. There's much more media today. I do think the 69 Mets, if they had won in our generation, it would have been just, because that was a miracle, Mets. I mean,
no question.
No one realized they won 100 games and they weren't going to beat the mighty Orioles.
Right.
Okay, please. And I was one of those. But I just think our team, number one, we won. New Yorkers never forget. The most exciting National League playoff with Houston.
Ever, yeah.
I mean,
people forget about the sixth game.
And then there was a, from game 6 and 7 was remarkable.
Right.
For us to, and against Boston, the remarkable games that will never be forgotten. And, we won 108 games. There's only around 16 teams in the history of baseball, 16, 17 teams that have won 108 games or more. And we are one of them. It's something to be very proud of.
No question.
And I just think our style of play, I think that Lenny, Wally, and Mookie, top of the order, set the tone. Mookie could run and hustle. And Lenny and Wally got down and dirty, and it just set the tone. And I think it appealed to blue collar New Yorkers. Yeah. I really do feel that way. And we got in a lot of scuffles, and New Yorkers like that.
67,
you were there. I think that appealed.
Yeah.
I mean, we were a hot tempered bunch, and we won 108 games. We kicked butt.
So, Right after the second out in 86, in game 6, I'm sitting there with you and Daryl Johnson. I'm trying to think of how are we going to explain to the media how the team won 116 games, whatever.
Oh, it would be 115.
115 lost. And I remember when the kid got the first hit, I had to go to the bathroom. He said, sit in the chair. And I wanted to pee to myself because I didn't want to move and break the mojo. And
forget Ron says he was in the room and he went to leave and I wouldn't let him leave.
Really?
Do you remember that?
Yeah, I do.
I made the second out and I didn't want to see them having fun in our field. And so we saw it all together. And it's so typical of Gary. And everybody, it's funny, interesting. I wasn't going to make the last out.
Yeah.
And I made the second out. And
Blood to left field.
Kevin Mitchell got the base hit. I mean, it was just remarkable. Yeah. And Ray Knight had the great series.
It was great. And I remember you were kind to me. I was just a kid out of college then. I remember that September you brought me to a hotel room in Montreal, and you said, "This could be the best day of your life, and the worst day of your life. The players are going to vote you a share if we win the World Series." And make a long story short, we win. I get $93,000. And Frank Cashin calls him into his office and says, "Jay, this is what you got to do. either accepting $93,000 from the player or $4,000 as a department head. What do you want to do? I went home my night, mom said, Mom, what should I do? My mom said, I need to raise a schmuck. Take the 93 grand. They take the 93 grand. I mean, I didn't know what a share was. You know what? Honestly, I was perceived as a player's guy, and it hurt me for a while. You know what I mean? Because how do you take the money? And you explained it to me that the players could do whatever they want to do with the
right.
money.
It came out of everybody's.
Yeah.
And it was not me that instigated that. It was just about everybody.
Well,
and I might want to say it was Ray Knight that might have. Well, I'm not. I can't be quoted on that.
Something more than the money, just to be thought of. But so you had a lot of honors you cured. Number retired twice in St. Louis and here.
No, well, not in St. Louis. Retired.
Hall of Fame. A judge recently wrote a book, which I gave to you, the case for Keith Sanders getting in the Hall of Fame. Do you think about that at all? I mean, going forward, I mean, so many different honors. I mean, and, you know, 11 gold gloves, MVPs, World Series champs, you know.
Batting title.
Body title. I mean, do you think about it, you know, I mean, do you think eventually my day's going to come or you try not to think about it?
But the Hall of Fame?
Yeah.
I don't know, Jay. I'm up again in 25.
Right.
And I really don't understand the voting. Was it 16? And
it's 60, you have to get 12 of 16.
12 of 16?
Yeah.
Dick Allen missed it by one vote.
Yeah. Can I stop you once? You know, Gil Hodges, 35 votes. And I found one thing. If you don't have a patron on the thing.
An advocate.
Joe Torre ushered Gil Hodges through. You know, he from Brooklyn knew what Gil was about. I mean, you got to be lucky on a committee to get people.
I know.
You know.
I understand. Jim Kotz will be an advocate for me,
right?
But I don't know if he's going to be on the committee. Another thing too, you know, since the pandemic, we lost a lot of Hall of Famers that I played against that played against me.
Yeah.
You know, Joe Morgan, Don Sutton. We lost a lot, and those are guys that saw me play and played against me or with me. And that could have a say. But, you know, Jay, there'd be nothing else left to attain in my career. It would be the greatest, it would be the cherry on top. But, you know, I'm not going to politic for it or anything like that. If it happens, it happens.
It's got to help that it's what you've given to the game, that, you know, the stats are fine, but it's got to be what you give back to the game and your career as a broadcaster and the stuff you do.
I don't want to get in as a broadcaster. I mean,
No. But it's got to matter.
I want to get in on my skills on the field. I mean, I don't. I know there's a broadcasting wing. So don't take me wrong. I want to get in on what I did on the field, and I have a lot of intangibles.
Leadership.
Played for two World Series champions, and you know this one here, where this team was such a perennial loser. That is really, and you know I'm here. It's hard to win here. The Yankees always have the back page. That's the Mets, and Met fans are the sky's falling. It's hard to overcome the there's a lot of negativity here. It's hard to overcome, and we did. It was a group effort. Obviously, it was a very talented team. 108 wins, that to me is my crown right there, is that I was part of that team.
Do you mean what typifies your career? I'll let you go, Keith. Cincinnati, July of 85, Ray slides into Eric Davis, third base, gets ejected, we have a fight. You make one of the greatest plays I've ever seen. Field the bunt right at home plate, throw the kid at third base, back to Tuffel.
Yes.
And we win the game. Dave Parker dropped the fly ball.
Off of John Franco.
Yes.
A line drive. And he backhanded it and dropped it. And he's a gold glover.
Yeah. But that one play for me typifies what you're about. You know, I mean.
Well, that wasn't that difficult to play, really. Because I was cheating so much and I was playing so aggressively in. Well, I just got the ball. It was an easy throw to Carter. I was worried because Carter hadn't played third. Yeah. That it was a different throw for him, that he might throw it away, and he didn't.
Last question, I promise. The greatest mound meeting in the history of mound meeting.
Uh-huh.
In game six in Houston, you and Kid and Jesse, what exactly did you say to Jesse?
I said, we had a three-run lead. We had a three-run lead.
Got that to one.
And they finally got the runner on second base.
Right.
I think it was Davis's bloop single.
Right.
Glenn Davis got on second base, and that was the tying run. Jesse was gassed. And Roger went five innings.
And Aggie went. We got through.
Aggie pitched great.
Four pitches.
And Roger pitched deep, and Jesse pitched three innings, I think.
Yeah.
And he was gassed. And sure, throw fastballs. We're three runs ahead. But once that runner got on tying run and got on second base, it was a winning run at the plate, and it was Kevin Bass.
Right.
And he had to bat right-handed. Perfect setup for Jesse because he was a high ball hitter, right-handed, and he didn't like a down breaking ball. And Jesse had a real good, awesome down slider. It was a perfect matchup for Jesse. So I just kind of came in for comic relief because it was so. You were there, Jay.
Yeah, it was
in the dome, 55, whatever it was, 1,000.
I didn't move for 8 innings in the locker room.
It was so loud.
Yeah.
And I can see Jesse was like aghast. And I just wanted to break the tension. And I learned that from Lou. Yeah, Brock. And pitcher's on the road, he's out there all by himself. Go in there and break up the tension. And I just said, if you throw another fastball, we're going to fight. And he giggled.
Yeah.
And I went to Kid. A kid came out, and I said, you can't throw it. And the kid goes, I know. And so it was a full count. I bet it was six pitches.
Yeah.
And he dropped the best slider, 3-2 on him, on the back door.
Yeah, well. Thanks for being a friend all these years, man. Appreciate it, Max.
You're my man.
Thanks, Keith. Appreciate it.
Did I ever turn down an interview when you always asked?
Never did.
If I did, it was because, Jay, I'm really tired. Can you just, and you'd always talk me into it.
Well, you're a big good friend for all these years, Keith. And
all right.
Hopefully one day we can celebrate your Cooperstown.
That would be wonderful, Jay.
Thanks
and you better
time.
Be there.
I will be there with Bella. Okay. Thanks for your time, Keith.
Okay.
Appreciate it.